Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Scam Wow! I'm Caitlin Brodnick.
I'm Sue Smith.
And we love scams. Guys, we love scams. We love you. Turns out we love talking about cults.
We can't get enough of them.
I keep thinking, like, is this a scam or is this a culty, creepy, religious thing? But guys, Scam Wow is going to cover it all.
The more we talk about cults, the more I realize that I've been in many.
Oh, the more we talk about cults, the more I realize I am like their target member. Like, I am so good. Anywhere, any place that's like, you want more friends? I'm like, sign me up.
Here's looking at you, Upright Citizens Brigade.
Like, do you want to have a theater degree and stand in weird positions for hours? Come to Syracuse University and join our cult.
Ooh, and guys. I'm even scared to talk about to name the Upright Citizens Brigade now, even though they barely exist anymore.
Everybody. I will name them all. Core class. Why did we have a core class as freshmen and made us like hold our arms at bizarre lengths and breathe? Fuck all of them.
You know what? But you got to give yourself some credit because I'm so jealous of people with theater degrees because I'm always like,
you must really believe in yourself.
No. Yeah. I'm always like, oh, you have real training. Like, all I have is fucking improv.
That's fine. Yeah. I have real training enough that I went out of that, graduated saying, I will never do Shakespeare again. I'm too dyslexic and this is torture.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm just not the Shakespearean type, if you haven't noticed. And they're like, we're going to push you. So we're going to have you play old Shakespearean men. Theater monologues. Oh, yeah. Always cast as like an old man whose daughter was dying.
Honestly, fuck Shakespeare. I hate to say it. Fuck Shakespeare. You know what I mean?
Honestly, he's fine. And if you're the Shakespeare type, like live and thrive and live that
sure,
life.
Sure.
I, Katie Brodnick, with my high-pitched voice, will never be a Shakespeare type.
Never.
With my dyslexia? No, thank you.
No. Though I must say I was in a Midsummer Night's Dream and I did.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you want to hear an insane episode, Lydia Hensler and I talk on our Patreon about how I was in a Midsummer Night's Dream as a fairy.
Aww.
And the position I chose on stage at literally was the most ridiculous part I've ever played. And guys, our Patreon's like, what, $1 and you get all of our episodes? Like, it's just really fun. And we use
five,
it as an excuse
yeah.
to talk about. Oh, fine. Yeah. Whatever. A schmick, a schmack. Who knows?
What else?
Yeah. Quick download and then you can cancel. No, I just love that because our Patreon, we tell a little bit more details. Anyway.
How have you been? How's your week? I haven't talked to you in forever.
Oh my God. I have not talked to forever. Yeah. So I was home for Passover. It was amazing. It was the first time I saw my family all together since COVID. They're all vaccinated except my sister and Alan, but they had both like quarantined and spent time away. And, God, it was amazing. And the whole time I was just so happy. And it was that moment where you're just like looking at life from really far away going, this is incredible. I can't believe like this is my life right now. So nothing really funny, just very sweet.
That's so sweet.
But my sister did finally listen to an episode. She listened to the butter painting episode and she bought herself a painting.
Great. So, great. She finally listened. Better than my family.
How are you, miss?
I went to a yoga class. Yesterday, it was my first time exercising in a year.
Amazing.
And it was so strange.
Zoom yoga?
No, it was an in-person outdoor yoga class.
Wow.
Yeah, with masks. It was lovely and weird and nice to be in my body again and feel like my body was mine. So it was great.
That's incredible.
And I'm very sore today.
Of course. Are you sore where like you can't sit on the toilet?
I probably will be tomorrow.
That's my barometer. I'm like, if I can't sit to pee... That means I had a really great workout.
If I can sit to pee, I didn't work hard enough.
Yeah, honestly, no. No. And guys, that's one of the horrible themes running through today's episode. Just
yes.
Intense exercise. This is a triggering, upsetting episode. This is an episode of cults and bullying, I would say.
Listen, we try to make it fun, but I got only a couple of jokes in. I tried my best.
You know, we can't really spice up a saddest time in someone's life. And so I'm saying, Mom and Dad, on your trip, it's not a great time.
No.
No. And we love her for that because she's so honest. So Mom and Dad, on your trip to Santa Fe for this summer, this isn't the episode to listen to.
No. Mm-mm. Mr. and Mrs. Brodnick, Maggie and Al, don't do it.
No. Other ones, but if you are interested in cults and how they can brainwash you and take a chunk of your life away, this is perfect.
Great. Yeah, it's great.
This is for you.
And we have a special guest. It's a listener who emailed us. She was the victim of so many scams. We had to talk to her.
Obviously, a wonderful, generous, kind listener. And you've heard her a bunch on our mailbag episodes.
Yeah.
She shared plenty with us.
Yeah, so we really hope that you enjoy this episode.
Okay, guys.
Please welcome
Sabra, Boyd.
Hi.
Sabra, thanks for being here.
Oh my gosh, we're so excited. And guys, you know Sabra because she calls in or emails us in for our mailbag episode and she's got all the hot goss on all the scams.
And Sabra, what's great about Sabra is that she is particularly susceptible to scams.
She's so, like a scam magnet. She's self-possessed. She is. Thank God, because so are we. We are
so
the
are
same.
We. And you know what? It's not great for her, but it's great for us. So thank you, Sabra.
Yeah, no, I'm so happy to be here. My husband and I are such huge fans and we listen to the show on road trips. And
that's
yeah,
so nice.
I love you guys.
Oh, well, thanks. We love you. And you've given us a lot of information before and given, like, guys, as we always say, please do our homework for us. And so
she did it all.
She has emailed us amazing links and articles.
And we were like, we got to have this girl on. We got to. Yeah.
So, Sabra, why don't you start us off and sort of give us the intro into what probably the cult that's, you know, you feel has the most space in your life at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, and also you mentioned that I'm kind of a magnet for scams. And I feel like part of that might, you know, be that I was born to a father who's like a scam artist. So I feel like maybe that just like cast this shadow or something of scams
Why
over
not?
My
you
life.
You have a soft spot for scammers. Who doesn't?
That's okay. Wait, what kind of con artist are we talking?
Oh, like a bad con artist, not like the friendly, funny kind. Like he stole my identity starting when I was five. And he also stole my younger sibling's identity.
Oh no!
And then when I was a teenager, I ended up having to like pay the IRS my back taxes for my dad because he had like registered me as the CEO of his business when I was in kindergarten. And
oh,
so,
no.
and I like faxed. Well, this is kind of going off on a tangent a bit, but
okay. No, this is incredible.
Yeah.
So I like faxed copies of my ID and everything to the IRS. And they said, well, we don't care how old you are. Your signatures are on all of the documents. So you owe us like, I think it was like tens of thousands. And I negotiated them down. And, you know, at 18, I didn't know to call a lawyer. So,
right.
Yeah. So like I ended up just paying it off. And at the time I was also like a homeless teenager. So anyway, that's like a whole thing.
Oh no.
Where are you at? Like, did you talk to your dad about this? Did you say, what the fuck? Did he die?
No, I hadn't talked to him. I really hadn't interacted with him since I was like 10 when my mom ran away with us. And then my mom kicked me out for being, my mom kicked me out for being gay when I was 14. So like, I was homeless for like about half of my childhood. So, I'm okay now. I'm 35 now.
That's just incredible. That's incredible. And we have to say, you're like, guys, you can't see us, but she's this gorgeous girl on our Zoom. She's so lovely.
She looks perfectly normal.
We're obsessed with her. We all look perfectly normal. We're all insane. But we just can't thank you enough. And also being so honest with your story. It's a lot. We all share a lot here and we really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. Because, I mean, there's such a stigma of hate for homeless people and like, They really are people who have lives and, you know, with enough bad luck, it could happen to any one of us.
Fully, fully. If I hadn't met my husband, I would have been homeless numerous times. So many times.
Yes. So you never confronted your dad about stealing your identity?
No, because he's a pretty violent person. Mm. So it was more like my safety was a bigger concern.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So I you know, until before I was 18, I couldn't stay in a shelter because I would have been arrested as a runaway. So once I turned 18, that's when I was able to stay in like a youth shelter for teenagers. And that was when I, you know, first started receiving mail again. I remember one of the social workers was like, oh, I have a letter for you. And I got really excited. Like, who could possibly be sending me mail at the homeless shelter? Yeah. Yay. And then it was an IRS letter telling me that I owed them thousands of back taxes. Yeah, but my friends tell me, they're like, well, you should really put down that you were Richie Rich and like a 5-year-old kindergartner CEO on your resume.
Yes.
Put that on your LinkedIn. Yes. Yes. Wow.
Oh, my God.
And your dad hasn't had to pay for any of this.
No, I mean, he's a career criminal. Yeah, I mean, he has a history of being like an informant. Like he gets arrested. Like I've, you know, looked at his recent like arrest record. And he's, mm-hmm. he gets arrested, but the charges never like are always dropped.
Wow. That's incredible. And that must be very frustrating also as the daughter and victim of his scams to be like, wait a minute.
Oh yeah. It's, I'm very much a proponent of defunding the police because like, mm-hmm. they just don't like, they've never protected me from him in the past and they don't mm-hmm. seem to like. Our legal system does not protect people. It's yeah. really like not victim centered. Mm-hmm.
But this just makes me want to get him. I want to tell everybody to get him.
Everyone listening, say, let's all bring out
your
notepads.
You can say his name and where he lives if you want, and then people can go get him if you want.
Like I said, I'm 35, so I've like, you know, let go of a lot of this stuff and just sure. tried to move on with my life and just mm-hmm. like focused on my own safety and like living my own life. And really the only reason that I had to look up his arrest record again recently was because he's still harming other people. And so yeah. at the risk of sounding like some self-righteous vigilante, like, you know, it is really different if he's still hurting people. And mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, and really like, I joke that my dad is kind of like the Whitey Bulger of exploitation and scams. Cause he mm-hmm. like, if there's a crime to commit or a way to exploit someone, like he's done it.
Mm. Do you want people to get him or not? Can we get him?
I'm working on it. I'm not going to tell anyone else what to do. I'm okay, not going to say okay. an email because I don't want to get in trouble.
You think about it. And if you change your mind, we'll put it in the show notes. Okay. We will do that for you.
The ScamWow Army.
Yes.
We have tough, amazing listeners that will fight for anything. And we love them.
And they will get him.
Amazing. Well, Sabra, we feel really lucky that we have you as our guest yeah. today. And we just want to hear more about your experience. And also, I love how open you are about all of this that you've gone through, because that's sort of Sue and I's sort of our bread and butter. Like our number one thing is let's just share it all. Let's just put it all out there, because you're only going to be better and help other people and prevent them from getting in these situations than if you share at all. So then maybe we can help another woman or another man who's another young person who could be easily mm-hmm. susceptible to sort of these things.
I totally agree. I mean, and I have to recognize that it's a huge privilege that I can, you know, share my story and these just really just totally weird things that have happened in my life mm-hmm. because, you know, I'm a freelancer now. And so I don't have to worry about, you know, employment prospects and like my coworkers, like just being really freaked out about my public whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I'm in a really privileged position to be able to share this stuff and not everybody can.
So when you were in the homeless shelter, how did you pull yourself up and out and like into an apartment? Like you are housed now and you're writing for like prestigious publications. Like it's amazing. How did you mm-hmm. get to where you are?
So I was 18 when I was in Portland and actually I was about to like hop on a train, like a hobo. I was about to hop on a train with some other sure. people. And I was waiting for them in this park that's well known in Portland called Paranoia Park. Mm-hmm. And it's called Paranoia Park because it's right across the street from a police precinct downtown. Yeah. And so everybody there who hangs out is, I guess, paranoid. And then some volunteers from this really, really awesome organization called Yellow Brick Road. Mm-hmm. They found me and they were like, hey, do you need any first aid or condoms? And I was like, what? And I was just sitting there and these three people, or two or three people, I can't remember, came up and like offered me condoms and first aid. And I was like, no, I'm good. Thanks. And then that's how they like start the conversation to be like, amazing. Hey, do you have anything else that you need? Like, And then they were able to like kind of help push me up the wait list to get into the shelter. Wow. And then later on, I ended up working with them and volunteering and doing the same thing. And they're just so awesome.
We're going to link them in our show notes. But that's sort of amazing that I'm assuming also it was people that understood your position or people that had been in your position. I feel that way with like when I speak with other alcoholics or something or somebody that I know, I'm like, oh, I can see the signs a million miles away and I can connect really easily with an alcoholic. I'm sort of assuming because you said you worked with them also that they can help people in that way too because they understand.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people who ended up working with them later after, you know, they were like stably housed and all of that. So I totally agree. You can see people who have survived certain or are going through certain things that you've also gone through. It's just kind of this antenna that I think you grow.
Yeah.
So how long were you in the shelter for?
For about, I want to say a year and a half, because I moved into my first apartment when I was 19. And I also have to give a shout out to Pear. P-E-A-R, like the fruit. Mm-hmm. And their website is pearmentor.org. They really helped me a lot too. They're an art program for homeless youth in Portland. And they, it's kind of cliche to say that art saves lives, but they literally saved my life. Like,
Yeah. If it works, it works. It's not cliche. If it helps you, it helps you.
So when did you encounter your first cult?
Okay. Well, I grew up, with my mom being extremely religious, extremely Lutheran. Mm-hmm.
I grew up Lutheran too.
Oh, yay.
Kindred spirits.
I believe that there needs to be more ex-Lutheran or Lutheran comedians because like Garrison Keillor sucks. Like,
this is very specific, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Oh my God, our God is an awesome God. I get it.
So yeah, I grew up Lutheran. So I guess it, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Christianity. So there's that. Before my mom kicked me out when I was like 13, she had been invited to Thanksgiving at a friend's house. And she brought me and my two siblings along with her. She told me on the way, we were driving there to have Thanksgiving dinner with them. And she said, so I just need to let you know that Diana's family is a little bit not traditional. And I was like, what does that even mean? And she was like, just not like us. I was like, okay. We got there and it turned out that they were polygamists. So Rod, Diana's husband, used to be like one of Warren Jeff's like right-hand men.
So we're talking, braid polygamist, not sister wives polygamist.
No, like sister wives.
But like very backward, like wearing the dresses with the French braids.
They had left Warren Jeff's. And so the three moms, the three sister wives, they dressed in like modern clothes and like Diana wore jeans and stuff. So they didn't dress that way. Okay. But only the first wife really dressed that way. And she had like, you know, the 90s bangs and the kind of like, I don't know, like sister wives bouffant. I'm not sure.
I know exactly.
I don't want to offend anyone, but you know what I mean.
And oh, we know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so there were three sister wives and they lived in this house that had three stories and each of the wives had their own floor of the house.
Wow.
And they had run away from Warren Jeff's because the husband and Warren Jeff's had some sort of disagreement over like the state of the church or something. Oof. And so the family had like run away basically to Washington State. And I was so confused because I was like, okay, like I'm going to be, you know, accepting on. I mean, if this is what makes them happy and as long as they're good parents, like, what do I care? But
and my mom likes them.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know. I'm just hungry like for dinner.
Where's the turkey, guys? Which floor is the turkey on?
Right. But I was so confused because I was like, well, where does the husband keep his clothing? Like, does he have a sock drawer on every floor? Like, and what does he do when he wants some alone time? I never got an answer to that question. My mom was like, shh, don't offend them. They've invited us to dinner. Be friendly. Like, don't be rude and ask about his socks.
Oh my gosh.
But you gotta know.
You gotta know.
I watched the hit TLC show, Sister Wives. I was just watching it before here. And I always wonder that. I'm like, where is his like home base?
Does he have like multiple deodorants? Like what's floating around?
I know. I never got that answered. But they did have, between the three of them, they had 12 children. So with me and my younger brother and sister, we had enough people to play football with equal teams. So that was kind of awesome.
Sometimes as a kid, I remember sensing it being like, that was a weird family. Like I even remember as like a little kid having like my spidey sense go up and go like, I'm uncomfortable here. Did you have any of those feelings? Did anything struck you as weird, or was it mainly the socks?
Oh, no. Yeah, I did not like the husband. He was really overbearing. Mm. I mean, he didn't do anything like overtly abusive or anything, but he was really, really controlling. Mm. And then I found out later that Diana had to like basically run away from him. So they had like a really messy, I mean, it's hard enough to divorce someone when you're in a monogamous marriage. Yeah. That's less. A polygamous marriage. So where you're not even legally married. So it was like, I think it was really complicated for her to divorce him and like get custody of her kids and stuff. So
that sounds complicated. How old were you then?
I was 13. So that was like right before my mom kicked me out for being gay. Even though I'm bi, but my brother like ran in the house and told her that I was gay and she was freaked out and like told me that her exact words were, I don't want you or your bad influence in my house or around my children. And at the time I like really helped take care of my younger brother and sister. So, you know, she was kind of doing me a favor because she was a really awful mom and
you got free of that in a way.
Yeah. But I was still really worried about my younger siblings.
Mm. Are you friends with them now? Are you close with them at all?
I've tried to, but it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you talk to your mom now or no? Did you ever reconcile?
No, I did try to reconcile. Well, I tried to reconcile with her a couple of times, like in my 20s. And then again, when I was like 30, and it went well for like the first month. And then suddenly the honeymoon would be over and she would, like the last time I talked to her, I think I was 30 and she asked me how I was doing. And, you know, I told her that I'd just gotten accepted to grad school, to like this really prestigious program for computer science. And, she said that I should pay for her to go to college and that it was selfish of me to go to college. Mm. And I was like, I'm going to be going into more student loan debt. Like, I don't think I can transfer my student loans to you. I don't know how you're suggesting I should do that.
Mm. Right. So you're just realizing like this is a conversation that is just making clear to you where you're like, well, I made a really healthy choice in my life and I'm in a much better space than being with her.
This is sort of not relevant, but it's sort of relevant. I had a similar situation with my dad. My parents were divorced the whole time since I was 8 until I was like 16. He was like, you have to choose a parent. You have to choose a parent to live with. And I was like, finally, when I was like 15 or 16, I was like, Dad, I'm not going to do that. It's not fair for you to ask that of me because I'm a kid. And he was like, well, then you just chose. And my uncle came over and I took all my stuff out of the house and I basically never saw him again. And I felt guilty. Like I felt like it was my fault. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh,
it's not the same as you, but I get that of like
bizarre pressure.
Yeah. Your parents like the love is not unconditional. It is conditional. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm so sorry, Sue. Like, there are unfortunately so many parents that are like that, that like put their kids in that position and it's not okay. And like, just because they're your relatives or your parents, it doesn't mean that you should continue subjecting yourself to their abuse.
Mm.
It's so not okay in our society to like say, I can't have a relationship with my mom. Like, I don't wish her any ill will. Like, I certainly hope she has a good life and finds happiness and whatever, but I can't be her punching bag.
Good for you. I think that takes a lot of strength.
You're pretty tough, girl.
Did you guys ever reconcile, Sue?
I tried. I would like call him and have awkward conversations every couple of months and then he died and I felt guilty. But now, that's okay. I mean, now I'm fine with it. Like, I feel... like, whatever. Like, I felt guilty that I wasn't there. Like, just this huge weight of guilt. And that's what made me do a lot of drugs and eventually bottom out and get sober. So if he wouldn't have died, then I would probably still be drinking. That's why I didn't have kids for a long time, because I was really afraid that I was just going to repeat history and be exactly the same. But
I resonate with that so much, because that's the reason that I don't have kids yet. Like, I want to. But yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, that is different about like generations after the boomers, like Gen X, millennials and Gen Z. Like, we're all more okay with airing our dirty laundry, and we're all more okay with like and just being conscious of trying not to repeat those mistakes. And like, I once had like this really nice gynecologist, and he was a male gynecologist, and he was actually like a really great guy. And I remember having this conversation with him and his physician's assistant, or she was his nurse actually. And I was like, I'm so afraid of repeating my parents' mistakes. And they both told me, they were like, the patients who are conscious of that going into parenthood are the ones that you don't need to worry about. It's the ones that like don't really think about this stuff. The ones that aren't neurotic about it.
Yeah.
So there was the Mormon polygamist family. And also I should like clarify, because I know Mormons and ex-Mormons who are like Latter-day Saints Mormons, and I just want to like make sure that that's clarified. I'm not saying that all Mormons are polygamists. Like,
no, it's just the Warren Jeffs.
No, but we've also talked shit about Mormons. And we have wonderful listeners who've explained to us things. So
it's not all Mormons, we know.
It's not all Mormons. We adore good Mormons. We detest the bad ones. That's it.
Right. So there was that, and then I'm trying to think what the next cult was. I had this one coworker, like when I was still living in the shelter and I was working, I had one coworker who like begged me to go to her church with her, and I really didn't want to go, but she just kept asking me every single day. So I finally was like, well, maybe if I go with her this one time, she'll stop asking and I can just say it wasn't for me. So I went to church with her, and it was in Portland, and it ended up being this like doomsday prepper cult that met in the basement of a Catholic church. I don't know if they just like rented out the basement of this church, but there was like a Spanish language Catholic service going on upstairs, and they were like singing like these, you know, beautiful hymns and stuff. And then downstairs, I could hear them upstairs, and I was like, I really want to go up there because the music sounds really nice. But I was like in this basement for, I kid you not, it was over 3 hours, like listening to them talk about like how Russia was going to like take over the US and was going to enslave us all, so that because they really wanted our wheat and our cornfields in the Midwest. And I was just like, oh my gosh, when is this over? Because I didn't have a way to get home, because it was like, so I like, or back to the shelter.
Actually, God, that's how they fucking get you. They're always like, I'm gonna ride to this one place in the middle of the desert.
The doomsday preppers. That's my doomsday, is being trapped
with
the 3 hours with the doomsday preppers.
Yeah, I was so, it was very scary. And I just, and then she kept asking me to come back again. And I was like, no, absolutely not. And I think should not go back either.
Do you remember the name of it?
No, I tried to find it. And I even like tried combing through Reddit, and I couldn't find it.
Maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, sometimes when I can't find it.
It was a really small cult. It was like only maybe 15 people or something. So they weren't very popular, fortunately.
Good.
They were such bummers. They're always doomsday prepping.
They're just always collecting like barrels of wheat or whatever.
Such a buzzkill.
They have no friends because they just have too many barrels of wheat.
So there's no space. There's just too much wheat.
No.
But my friend or my coworker who had invited me, like she was also homeless at the time. So I feel like there's like this through line of, you know, homeless teenagers especially are really susceptible to being lured in by cults, because like I mean, I'm gonna get to this later, but I think like I wouldn't have been so susceptible to being, or so vulnerable to being lured, if I wasn't like wanting some semblance of a family.
100%.
Yeah. And I mean, I did get approached by like Scientology people and stuff, but I knew that was like not for me, so fortunately I didn't do that. But then I did have a girlfriend who invited me to a Nexium meeting.
No.
That is fascinating.
Yes.
Yeah, so I was dating this girl, and her whole family was involved. And so she invited me to their ESP, like their initial meeting. And it was in the conference room of this hotel room in a suburb of Portland in Beaverton.
It's always in a conference room in a hotel room. It's like, never walk into those, guys. If you're ever invited to go, just walk into a different place. Just go into the hotel lobby, bar, something. Nothing good comes out of a hotel conference room.
Mm-mm. Don't go to a hotel.
Yeah, I agree. So we were in this conference room, and I watched the Vow documentary, but I actually only watched like half of it because it got so upsetting. Like, you know, they have you like write down like your greatest fear and like your goals and stuff. And then it was way too intense. Oof. And also I got really confused because most of it's really like geared toward people like kind of corporate America, you know? Mm. And at the time I was like, I think I was 20 when that happened or when I went there. And so I was a college student. I was not interested in like kind of the corporate aesthetic of NXIVM. And
you're like, I don't want to wear like corporate casual. Like,
no,
fuck that.
I don't have a silk blouse to dry clean. Thank you.
When they asked me, they were like, what's your, what's the goal that you're going to accomplish when you leave here today? And I was like, I guess I want to join roller derby. I don't know.
Good for you.
How did you realize it was a cult and not just a weird like executive thing?
Well, in addition to like not wanting to be, not enjoying the corporate executive aesthetic of it, like I already was in a cult. So I was like, my dance,
like,
my
cult.
my cult dance card is full. I'm
None
sorry.
Avail during this time. My cult is filled.
Not
oh, that's
avail.
Incredible. Wait, so that is incredible. So
that's
for,
hilarious.
Good for you. You know what? You know when you're in too many cults, okay?
Yes.
You're in one too many.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So at this time, you were already in another cult. Is that the one that you emailed us about?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was going to the this college to try to enroll and like fill out my FAFSA application and all of that. Cause I was like, I don't want to be homeless forever. And college is the ticket, right?
Yeah. Somehow. So with also student loans.
Well, I don't know. Well, this was like 2004, 2005. So this was like before the recession. This was like back when we still thought that we could pay off our student loans.
What a glorious time.
Remember that day, that time?
We were so innocent.
Yeah. So I was like going to pick up like registration paperwork and stuff. And I walked past this, this like conference room at the college, and they had like a sign on the door, like, that said martial arts and yoga and, you know, free for students and stuff. So I went in there and they had just started, and everyone was just looked so happy. And I was like, I want to be this happy. Like, where do you sign up for this? And then they, you know, they like introduced themselves and they invited me to come to like their center that was downtown. And at the time, actually, like at no point did I like tell them that I was homeless, because I didn't look homeless. I guess I should really emphasize that. Like, you know, I would like dumpster dive outside of like boutiques and like thrift stores and stuff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And I just remember like everyone being so friendly and just seeming like this beautiful family. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted a family, but I didn't want to get pregnant, you know? So it was like, how do I
do this without getting a baby out of it?
And the cult was called Dawn. So they've gone by like different names. They're a martial arts cult that was founded by a Korean man named Dr. Il-Chi Lee. Even though he's not a doctor, he just calls himself that.
Sure, of course.
Most cult leaders do.
Mm-hmm. I think that happens a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and so so it's called Don Mudo or Don Hawk, spelled D as in David, A-H-N as in Nancy. I also want to like emphasize that it's not like a mainstream aspect of Korean culture in any way. Like most of the leaders and probably half of the students were Korean, but yeah, it's like a very like niche cult. Mm-hmm.
But you're thinking at the time that it's just like a club at the university, right?
Taekwondo,
right, yeah.
Yoga, okay. A place to hang out.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I had done Taekwondo in high school and like some other, you know, yoga and martial arts and Tai Chi and stuff like that. So a lot of the movements were really familiar to me. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is just, you know, it's kind of like an amalgamation of, you know, Taekwondo and Tai Chi. And then we all wore like white uniforms that kind of look like a dobok uniform. Mm-hmm. And
what's that? Like a gi?
Yeah. Similar to that. And I feel like, especially with, you know, with us being quarantined during COVID and stuff, I think that, you know, that we're all more vulnerable to the lure of cults, because with like enough isolation and uncertainty, because it was also really nice to have someone telling me like, this is what you should be thinking. This is how you should feel. This is what your goals should be. This is why you're unhappy. And having someone just like with authority tell you like, this is what's wrong. This is what you need to do to fix it. And just kind of like lay that out for you was really a relief, you know?
And it's a parental comfort too. You're just mm-hmm. like, I mean, I even have mm-hmm. that. We go home to visit my parents for Passover and I'm like, please tell me how to eat properly. Like, I'm just like, just tell me what to do. Put on my plate. Like I think there's comes a time where you're just exhausted and you just need someone else to sort of be in control or take the reins. And of course, if you're dealing with homelessness and you're dealing with being completely independent starting at 14, that's exactly what you would want. That's exactly what I would want. And I had a home, but I really still at 14 to 18 was like, tell me how to be better in every single way. I still to this day, I'm like, what TikTok video is going to tell me how to put the best snail cream on my face? Like we all want to improve and be better.
So yeah. How long were you a part of this cult?
2004 to 2010.
Wow.
So about 6 years.
And what's culty about them aside from, well, I mean, it sounds martial arts. Tell us a little about the cultiness.
So once I did have a job and was in school and everything, then they started to demand that I pay for all these things.
Yeah.
And they also like they told me to sign up for like all of these retreats and things like that, and would basically like shame me. Well, so when they first required me to start paying for classes, one of the instructors told me that I had the spine of a 60-year-old woman. And
oh, no.
Even looking back, I'm like, I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good.
Yeah, it's probably not true.
Yeah. And at the time I was like, I think I was like 19, 18 or 19. And so I was like, wow, the spine of a 60-year-old woman, I should really like do something about that. And then they would just, you know, kind of like love bomb you. And it was just this constant like back and forth of like telling you like all these things that are wrong with you, like, you know, about your weight or your skin. Like they would tell me like, oh, your skin doesn't look good. Like you're really not trying hard enough. You need to like sweat out, you know, they'd use term just like what are now to me red flags, but things like you need to sweat out the toxins. You're not trying hard enough. Mm-hmm. And then when they'd kind of start to see that I was getting to my breaking point, then they would like love bomb me and they'd say like, oh, you're so great. And you should really like become an instructor, or, you know, they called them like sabunim or masters. There's this Village Voice article that's really good. It was published in 2006. And I think I sent it to you guys. Mm-hmm. It's about Julia Siverls, who died during one of these trainings, like one of the ones that I went to. I didn't go to the one where she died, but she died a year before I joined. So she died of dehydration in the desert. And like, it's really scary because had I known that she had died, I would have totally not, you know, joined a cult.
And in that article, was it saying that she was just was doing one of their trainings? And when you're saying like one of those things, what did that entail besides doing yoga moves? Can you talk at all about what those were like?
So the training that Julia died during was when they were like going on this hike through the desert in Sedona, and they just push you beyond your breaking point. I mean, that's part of what's really culty about them, because they just push you to the point where you're susceptible to being brainwashed, and you start to like have basically like neurological symptoms or symptoms of dehydration where you just feel so weak. And then like, I don't know, like the physiology of like physically and mentally breaking you down so that you can feel like you're being, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like saved by the cult. And one of the specific exercises that I remember doing in Sedona, where Julia died, was they had all of us lie down side by side in these really shallow graves that were already like dug. It was in the desert, like, so it was really sunny, but they had, and then they like, you had like a partner, and your partner would drape this like black veil over your body and over your face. And they'd be like, you're dead now. Like, what do you imagine people say about you now that you're dead? And look at everything in your life that you haven't accomplished. Like, look at everything that you, like, so it was like, it was really intense, but yeah, this is something that they do with all sorts of people. Some people who were like cancer survivors. And I mean, that's the other thing about Don, that like most of the people in the cult were like professionals, like middle-aged professionals, mm-hmm. or students. So I remember some of the other people were, like there were a couple IRS agents.
Wow.
They also would remind us periodically, like, don't look at the bad reviews online because, you know, the bad reviews are, they're all lies. And those are people who just like have it out for us or something. And then also like, if someone left, we weren't allowed to talk to them anymore. And we were like threatened with like not being allowed back. So basically like excommunication, if you were still like, we were always warned, like, don't talk to people who have left because they'll distract you and pull you off your path, like your path of enlightenment.
This is sounding more and more like the UCB every minute.
Yeah, I know.
oh gosh. Well, I don't know. We probably didn't have as much fun.
We didn't have any fun either.
No. Did you, were there people in the group that like you felt parental towards, like, what? Because I feel like if I was, whenever I'm in groups like that, there's some people that I'm like, oh, this one is really, we really connect, and they're the one I'm going to be just like her or him, and we're going to connect. Like, sometimes that, I feel like those are sort of touchstones that keep people involved in these cults.
Yeah. I mean, I had one friend who was also a student, and she was like a few years older than I was. And I really felt like she was kind of an older sister. Mm-hmm. So times that I thought about leaving, you know, I talked to her about it and she would convince me to stay. Mm. Yeah. I should also mention that, you know, the sleep deprivation was like another tactic that they used to really break you down.
Yeah.
So I was like required to go there at 5 a.m. to do bowing exercises and then teach classes. And then I was still in college. So I was like doing that at 5 a.m, then running the class at the college and then working, you know, my minimum wage, like food service job or whatever I had at the time. And then after that, I would come back to the center and I would, you know, I would teach another class and then I would help clean like on my hands and knees.
Yeah.
Like they had us like clean the whole studio like every night. And sometimes I'd be there till midnight. And so I was getting like maybe 3 hours of sleep and giving them all my money. Yeah. So the sleep deprivation also definitely contributed to staying because I just, you know, I was just brainwashed. Another weird thing is like they would find local organizations for us to volunteer with. So for example, they once found this wildlife conservation group, and they sent us out into the woods to like cut down ivy from trees because like the invasive ivy pulls trees down. Mm-hmm. So they like volunteered us as like this free like group of people to try to save the forest from the ivy. We were out there for 8 hours.
They were getting paid for that. But you were, I bet you.
Probably. I don't know. Yeah. And we were out there for like 8 hours and then we would get home and like we'd have to cook like our own food and stuff, or we'd get back to the place that we were staying and have to cook our own food together. And they also like had us do like other really physically strenuous exercises, like holding our arms up above our heads for like an hour. And then every time one of us would drop our arms, then we'd have to start over again. So it like seeded this like resentment of that one person. And it was just really unhealthy. So like around that time is when I like kind of reached my breaking point, because they told me that I couldn't be like 1 foot in and 1 foot out. Like I remember Master Kim, that was her name, like sitting down with me and saying like, you can't be doing like 1 foot in, 1 foot out. You have to commit fully. And she was like telling me that I needed to like move into like the master's house and train to be a master. Cause I, she could tell that like I wasn't entire, like 100% committed. And I was about to graduate from college and I was like, I have all these student loans. There's no way I'm going to be able to pay off my student loans being, you know, a martial arts instructor. it was really scary because it's like I've already lost my family, you know, being a homeless teenager, so I'm gonna be losing my family a second time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this time it was my choice, I guess, is the main difference.
And I'm sure you want to put that off as long as possible. You're like, I don't want to recreate this. This was such a painful time in my life. And then, you know, there's sort of, again, it's like another unhealthy group of people forcing you to make that decision. Mm-hmm. Whenever I've left something like in a very controlling atmosphere, I felt very insecure for a while afterwards. I felt like very nervous, or I felt like very unsure of myself or second guessing. Did you, when you left, what actions did you take to get out? And then how was that after?
Yeah. So I was really fortunate because I left at the same time as two of my best friends. Mm. And we kind of formed this impromptu support group for each other.
Good.
And I think that without that, it would have been so much harder, because I got inundated with like calls and text messages and emails and stuff like to come back from other members and other like instructors and stuff. And a third person was like my best friend. And I remember answering her call and only her call. And she said like, you should come back. You've put in so much work. So she was kind of like, I don't know if they'd given her a script or something, but she was like playing into the sunk cost fallacy. She was like, mm-hmm. you've put in so much work and you're just walking away from it. And you should really like listen to your soul and stuff. And I was like, my soul tells me that I need to not be in a cult. And I think you should leave too.
Yeah.
Gotta go.
And she said, well, I can't be your friend anymore. Like, I can't talk to you if you're going to leave. So it was just, it was like this form of excommunication. Like, and I was just like losing all of these people that I had really intense relationships with, you know, because we had like done things together, like pretended we had died and like, you know, done these really intense physical exercises where it felt like we were going to die, like to the point that I was like seeing like spots and stuff. So like, you know, they just really pushed us to our breaking point and past that. And I just keep thinking about Julia Sivrals and like, you know, she literally was pushed to her death and it could have been me. I remember, so my body was still programmed. Like I still had like the muscle memory of waking up every morning to do bowing exercises at 5 a.m. and all these other things. And so I wake up before dawn and then I just be like lying in bed, like, well, I don't want to do bowing exercises because I'm trying to just like basically quit this drug cold turkey. Like that's what it really felt like.
Yeah.
And so instead I started watching like reruns of Oprah's show on YouTube as like a DIY
that's how you
cult
do it.
Rehab.
That's how you do it. Oprah will get you out of that cult.
It felt like Oprah was the only person that I could trust. And like
maybe
Oprah
she is, though.
Via YouTube.
I don't think you're wrong. I think Oprah is the only person all of us can trust.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you left?
I was 24 or 25. And well, let's see. It would have been, I graduated in 2010. So,
okay. And so what was your next step after graduating college and a cult within like a year of each other?
Well, I might get a lot of hate mail for this, but I graduated in 2010, which was still during the 2008 recession. Like there were just no jobs. And, I applied for hundreds of jobs. And the only thing I got a call back about was AmeriCorps. And like I said, I might get a lot of hate mail about this, but AmeriCorps is horrible and they exploit.
Really?
Oh yeah. They exploit people's altruism. That might be a whole other episode.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. They, so you're given a living stipend and in a major city, it's not enough to live on. It was like, it's taxed. And I think after taxes, it was like about $1,000. And that's not enough to pay rent. And then also like I had to be at 3 different campuses. So I had to have a car because it was a city. Long story short, within 6 months, I was homeless again. Yeah. And I mean, like all of the people that I like, and actually 2 other people in my cohort were also became homeless during their AmeriCorps term. So it was basically like, if you didn't have parents or a wealthy boyfriend or something to live with, then, you know, you became homeless during AmeriCorps. And it was really ironic because we, like my group, my cohort, we were tasked with helping first generation students and like refugee students access college. And most of the students that we were helping were actually like better off financially than we were. So
you're like, can I crash on your couch while I help you? Let me help you.
And I mean, I've been criticized. Like, I mean, when I've written or talked about my criticisms of AmeriCorps, I've been told that I'm like really naive, or that I was really naive, that I should have known what I was signing up for. But I don't know.
You're 24 years old.
Yeah. In our orientation, they told us how to sign up for food stamps. And most of the other people in there had never had food stamps before. And that was like, that should have been like the red flag. Like, this is not for me. I need to keep job searching no matter how desperate I am. And like, they also make you sign a contract that you won't work a second job. So you can't supplement the $1,000.
Oh my gosh.
What are they hoping they're going to get out of this? Like, how are they keeping people employed?
They give free labor to nonprofits, basically. And it's kind of like this, I don't know, it's like some sort of like PR washing thing for the American government. I don't know. So But and then if you quit early, then that means that you forfeit, because at the end you get, I think it's like a $5,000 scholarship. And if you have to quit early for any reason, even if it's like a medical reason, because one other person in the group had a car accident and she had to leave early and she didn't get her scholarship because of that.
Oh, gosh.
So you were also a child actor?
So I was also a child actor until my mom ran away with us, basically until I was 10. And I was mostly in commercials. I did a Power Wheels commercial when I was about six. And I kind of got typecast as the kid who got along well with animals and dogs. So I was constantly cast in all of these commercials where there was a golden retriever.
Animals running around.
Yeah. I wasn't afraid of dogs. So they were like, get the girl who likes the dogs.
That's so insane.
That might be another scam in my life as well.
Commercial acting is 100% a fucking scam. Trust me.
Oh, totally.
Someone who's done it for 10 years, it's a scam.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You know, my parents spent all the money that I earned. So the Coogan Act, is the law that protects child actors from their parents basically spending everything that they make. But that's only, that law only exists in California. I might get this wrong. California, New York, I think Louisiana and New Mexico. And so we technically lived in Arizona and my parents never, even though I was eligible, I was union eligible for the Screen Actors Guild, they never got me my SAG card, even though I could have had that. So I had no oversight basically. And I was in Target commercials and Power Wheels and a Mattel commercial and a bank commercial, ironically. And then I think I was in this one, I was only in a couple of scenes, but there was this Hallmark, Lifetime type movie where I was supposed to cry about my dad leaving my family, in a divorce movie or something. And I remember having so much trouble with that scene. I think I was 8 years old at the time. And I was supposed to look straight into the camera and start crying and say, "Daddy, please don't leave."
Oh, geez, hard for child.
But I couldn't get it because I remember I was like, "I don't like my dad. I want him to leave. I can't get into character."
You're like, how fast can he leave?
Yeah, so I ended up just imagining my dog running away and being sad about that instead.
Oh my gosh, that's insane.
Wow.
That's incredible. Well, do you have anything, how do you feel now? I know you said you've done therapy. I feel terrible. I don't want this to be an episode to spiral you down to the terrible memories of everything.
We don't want to re-traumatize you.
No.
But, no, I'm okay.
Yeah. How have you now looked at it? Maybe you can offer advice to any listeners going through this of how to sort of, I think there's this idea, and a lot of, we've talked about this even in our last episode about how when you are conned, when you're involved in a scam or involved in a cult, it's very hard to break yourself away because then it believes that you were duped in this sense or you were susceptible to these lies. So is there anything that you have said to yourself or that helped you get that freedom to just be I wasn't in the right mind and I was duped and this wasn't a true reality at the time that has helped you move forward?
Yeah. Actually, exercising at home during the pandemic because I really have not gone to any yoga classes or cycling classes at all in the last decade because out of fear, really. My husband will invite me or used to, before the pandemic would invite me to a yoga class and I would get dressed and everything and get ready to go out the door. And then I would just have a panic attack right before leaving because I feel like I can't trust. I know this sounds so weird and stupid, but
no, you can't open yourself up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't trust an exercise instructor, whether it's a cycling instructor or a yoga instructor or, some sort of weight training, as much as I want to go to those classes, because sometimes you meet really nice friends and you have fun. I'm just so scared of being duped again.
Of course, I don't know. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what made me vulnerable before. And I'm worried I'm going to miss some sort of warning sign again. Mm. So like exercising at home during the pandemic and kind of like doing remote exercise classes has really healed me in a weird way from my paranoia about exercise instructors, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So, I mean, a lot of people will say that Peloton is kind of culty, and I won't disagree with that with that assessment. But I have to say, I might be saying her last name wrong, but Tunde Oyeneyan. I'm probably butchering her name, but Tunde, the instructor on Peloton, like she just exudes like joy and has like the best playlists and like is just so fun. Mm-hmm. And I love her.
And then you can turn her off. Yay. That's what I love about this. I'm like, and then I can turn you off and go back to my real life.
I don't have to worry about like someone guilt tripping me and telling me I have the spine of a 60-year-old.
So rude. How dare she spine shame
you? We will tell you on Scamwell, you do not.
No, you have a beautiful spine. It's okay. Perfect. Yes.
It's holding you up, and that's all it needs to do, right?
Ugh, that's all it needs to do.
All Scamwell listeners have like great spines.
All of our listeners have the cutest, hottest, sexiest little spines that are like doing such a good job.
We teach people to have backbones on the show, okay?
Yeah.
Yes. And they have sexy backbones.
They're sexual. Mine might be curved because I have scoliosis, but it is fine.
It is
fine. Beautiful.
It's doing great.
Yes. Sabra, thank you so much for sharing your tumultuous life with us.
And yeah, thank you. I hope to someday get my memoir published because there's a lot more weird adventures to talk about.
Well, we are here for it. We are here for it. And yeah, and if people can find your writing online, you've written some incredible things.
Yeah, what's your website?
Oh, thanks. My website is my name, Sabra, Sabra Boyd.com. And then my Twitter, I'm more active on Twitter than I think most other platforms. So it's at Sabra M, then my middle initial M is in Mary Boyd.
That's amazing,
Sabra. And did you want us to get your dad?
Yeah. Circling back, should our listeners go get him?
Should they get him?
Let me get back to you on that because I'm working on it right now, and hopefully something will come of that.
She might get him herself, guys, before this episode even comes out. You don't know.
I will update you, though. You'll be the first to know.
Yes, please.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and let me know if you have any follow-up questions.
Of course. All right, great. Thank you.
We appreciate it. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Guys, thank you so much for listening to this very special episode. And thank you, Sabra, for being an amazing guest.
Thank you, Sabra, for unveiling your heart and being the victim of scams so that you can tell us about them.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate it. And our listeners, anybody going through that, just know you're not alone. And also, you can get out. It feels like you can't, but you can.
She did. Look at her. She had a beautiful apartment. We're here to tell
you. Yeah, guys, we just zoomed. Her apartment's gorgeous. And she can get out of that. You can too. And we love you.
You also feel like you are a scam magnet and you want to help other people, feel free to email us at scamwowpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you have any scams or any updates, you can always call us on our hot tip hotline because you know I love a phone call at 347-509-9414. And guys, a butter painting update. I did have a listener DM me and ask me to see a picture of the butter. I send it to her. So if you want to see the butter painting, hell yeah, listener, you're my new BFF and I'll send you paintings of butter forever.
And we did put the link to where you can get your own reproduction in the
and
show.
And I emailed them and said, just so you know, you're in my podcast.
And you should sponsor us.
Yeah. They were very, very sweet. They're like, we will tell the artist, you know, not written clearly or understand. It was clearly a translation, but we will tell the artist and he is very proud. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad. My sister's getting a painting from them. Just keep buying stuff from them, guys. They're amazing.
Support them. And if you want to listen to back episodes, want to get on our Patreon, all that stuff. Oh, there's a new Patreon episode out. I made my husband tell me about NFTs, even though he's confident he does not know anything about NFTs. Our baby was on
NFT.
A non-fungible token. It's like cryptocurrency. It's very confusing.
Oh, your baby was on it?
Yeah, he did some gentle cooing.
Did this Patreon without telling me. She's like, and a Patreon's up. And I'm so excited.
Because Katie had done all the Patreons for months because I've been incapacitated. So I just wanted
you
to
do
surprise,
what you gotta do.
Surprise her with one.
It was fun.
All right. We love you. Thanks so much for listening.
We love you. And thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Kate. Yes. And we will see you all next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Essie, one of the hosts of Bitches on Comics, the most welcoming place for LGBTQ plus folks and women to chat comics, fiction, and pop culture. Bitches are both wanted and encouraged on our podcast. We speak with amazing guests about the media they've created, critiqued, and loved, and you don't have to just take our word for the great time we're having over here. We've been named a best comic book podcast by several publications, including Book Riot, The Mary Sue, and Comic Book Herald. So tune in and listen to us talk with your faves like Carmen Maria Machado, Amy Chu, Mari Naomi, Anthony Oliveira, and many, many others. Our whole goal is to include more folks in the comic book and pop culture world and to help new readers find comics and speculative books they'll love, with no shade for being new. You can find Bitches on Comics wherever you get your podcasts, and you can learn more at bitchesoncomics.com.